Test 1, 2.
Okay. Morning, John. What did I do with that? Should never have invented phones.
What?
They should have never invented cell phones. What do we ever do with all them? I'm not good about hearing names of when they bring themselves up. I'll try to keep track in case. Are you? You ready, Alan? You ready, Alan? Should we start up? Think we got most people here?
Yep.
Let me look to make sure the opposing party's here. There's Jasper, so I don't get anybody saying we started without. No, Jeff wasn't going to show up. I don't know if anybody else was, so. Okay, we'll start up. We'll call the budget section to order. I'll ask Legislative Council to call the roll.
Chairman Pollard?
Aye.
Representatives Ballou, Bow, Brandenburg, Carlson, Felser, Devlin, Dosh, Glassheim, Grandy, Gugisberg, Hawken, Holman, Kempenick, Kreit, Martinson, Mock, Munson, Nelson, Onsid, Sanford, Scarpel, Striley, Thorson, Vigasa, Wieland, Williams, Senators Lee, Bowman, Carlisle, Herbaly, Grindberg, Heckerman, Holmberg, Kilzer, Klein, Krebsbach, Mathern, O'Connell, Robinson, Schneider, Wanzik, Wardner, Warner,
we have a quorum. With that consideration of minutes from our June 18th, okay, there is a motion from Senator Robinson, a second from Senator O'Connell for approval of the minutes. Do you need a roll call, just a voice vote? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. With that, the Legislative Council staff on the 2013 Finance Facts brochure.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, before I talk about the Finance Facts brochure, I would like to introduce Adam Matiak, who's a new member of the fiscal staff on Legislative Council. Adam was an intern during this last session and did just a great job, so we're happy that he's on staff as a full-time employee now, and he'll be working with the budget section. The second item I wanted to point out was The agenda has, most of the presentations today are linked on the agenda. So if you do are using your computer or iPad and you want to view the presentations electronically, they are linked on the agenda. So if you go to the agenda on the legislative website, you can view the presentations that way as well. And we will be trying to have those on there the afternoon prior to each of the meetings. So just for your information on that. So then the pocket brochure that we have completed for this year, I'd just like to take a couple minutes and walk through some of the sections that are in it and some of the key charts. So if you turn to page one, the first section is economic statistics. Here we have charts on the population, and at the bottom of the page, the per capita personal income. And as you can see, in 2012, North Dakota was at almost $52,000 for per capita personal income, which is seventh among the states. On page three, there's information on the gross state product. You can see there was about a 15% increase between 2011 and 2012 in North Dakota gross state product. Moving on to page four at the bottom, there's a chart on oil production and oil prices, showing the history of that going back to 2008. And then on the bottom of page five, there's a chart on average home sale prices by city in the state. And this is quite interesting to see how the housing prices have just been going up substantially in the last couple of years. As you can see, the Williston and Dickinson right now have the most expensive homes in the state. And then there's often questions about property taxes. So on the bottom of page six, there's a chart on property taxes for schools, cities, counties, and miscellaneous, and then in total. So that's there for your information. The next section talks about the state budget. We've updated all these charts for the 2013-15 biennium, as was approved by the 2013 Legislative Assembly. So on pages 8 and 9 is information on revenues. It shows the various major tax types on the top of page 9 and what the anticipated collections are for those. At the bottom of the page are more specific information on tax rates, individual income tax, corporate income tax, and sales tax. Then on pages 10 and 11 is information on appropriations. Page 10 has general fund information. At the bottom of the page, you can see the total general fund budget, how that's increased over the past few bienniums. And then information at the very bottom of the page on the footnote is on one-time funding items that are included in those numbers. And then total appropriations is shown on page 11. Pages 12 and 13, information on state employees. And then assistance to political subdivisions on the top of page 13, there's often some questions on that. And then also a chart on total state debt at the bottom of page 13. And then on pages 14, there's information on the Common Schools Trust Fund, the chart on the middle of the page. Again, we often get questions on how much is in the Common Schools Trust Fund, and this shows you that information. It's about $2.4 billion was the estimate for in June of 2013. And then again, information on the Legacy Fund, how much has been collected over the past couple years, and that by 2015, the estimate's to be about $3.1 million in the Legacy Fund. The next section then talks about K-12 education. I won't go into too much detail on that. So there's a section on K-12, and then on higher education, section on human services, corrections, economic development, and finally on transportation at the end. So I won't go into any detail on that, but the information is there, and hopefully as you're asked to respond to questions or give presentations, that this can be a resource for you to get quick information on the state budget and other finance facts about North Dakota. So with that, unless there are any questions, that concludes the review of the brochure.
Any questions of Alan? This is good information. Senator Wardner.
Mr. Chairman and Alan, my question would be on the state debt. The amount that the general fund has to pay for, that is, I imagine it's some of these combined, like the DOT or something like that. But I know that our general fund obligation to bonding is going down, and do you know that number?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, really the only item at the bottom we're on page 13 at the bottom is the state debt chart. The state building authority a portion of that $69 million, that would be what the general fund repays. All the other ones would be special funds.
Any other questions of Alan? Thank you, Alan. With that, we'll move on to our 1010 item, Office of Management and Budget. Probably need just a few minutes to pass out the information, I suspect. Pam, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pam Sharp. I'm the director of the Office of Management and Budget. And all of you should have a handout now, status of the general fund. And we'll just jump into the first page, which is the status of the general fund. It is the wrap-up for the 11-13 biennium. And about a month ago, I sent a letter out to all of the legislators informing them what our ending balance turned out to be after we did all our biennium end adjustments and reconciliations. And that ending balance turned out to be $1,396,000,000. I'll just go through it starting at the top, which is, this is in the format that you should find familiar. We began the biennium with the beginning balance of unobligated balance of $996 million. Our revenues for the biennium totaled $5.155 billion. And just to put this in perspective, this was about $222 million more than you had anticipated when you left town in May. So we had available to spend for the biennium $6.2 billion. The next section shows the appropriations for the biennium, our original appropriations, the legislative appropriations during the special session, and contingent appropriations during the special session, the authorized carryover from the previous biennium. And then here's a new number, the emergency appropriations by the 2013 legislature available to spend in the 11-13 biennium, and that was $329 million. And then there were $60 million of supplemental appropriations, which was the same amount when you left town. That totaled $4.733 billion of appropriation authority. There was $50 million of unexpended authority returned to the general fund or turned back. And I do have that, the detail on the turned back, and I'll go through that with you next. So the total amount of appropriations less our turn back was $4.6 billion, leaving us an ending balance of $1.5 billion prior to the $181 million transfer to the Budget Stabilization Fund. And that left us with an ending balance of $1.396 billion. Now, when you left town, the estimate, your estimate, the last day of session, was that we would have $1.47 billion. So for those of you who like to do a little bit of math and reconcile those numbers, I'll tell you what happened, how we got from the $1.47 billion down to the $1.396. If we start with the $1.472 billion and we add the additional $222 million of revenue that you didn't know about at the time, and then if we subtract the $329 million of emergency appropriation authority, and then if we add the additional $30 million of turnback, because we got 50, we anticipated 20, then you'll get to right around the $1.396 billion. So it's the three things that made the difference was additional revenues, increased emergency appropriations available to spend, and then increased turn back. So resulting in about $77 million less ending balance than what you thought. If you turn to the next page, this is the detail of the $50 million turn back. And that $50 million turns out to be 1.06% of the total general fund appropriations. And we do have it listed by agency number and agency. Just a few that I will point out that you might notice that maybe seem a little unusual. Under OMBs, about the fourth one down, you'll see that OMB turned back $5.7 million. And $5 million of this was a contingent transfer for any 2012 disasters that may have occurred. And this contingent appropriation for a transfer was made during the special session last biennium, or about a year ago. So $5 million was set aside if we had any additional disasters in 2012, which we did not. So that $5 million was turned back to the general fund. If you look under 201, public instruction, they turned back $11.8 million. And over $10 million of that was for mill levy reduction grants. And we were aware of that when we went into the legislative session, and that was included in our turnback number, in our original estimate for turnback. Department 325, Human Services, turned back $14 million. And as you are aware, Department of Human Services did have a $22 million deficiency appropriation for FMAP. And that was necessary. However, they still were able to turn back $14 million. And that $14 million of turn back was the result of some long-term care savings. And then I guess the one other one that I would just point out to you is the Department of Corrections, number 530, had turn back of $1.6 million. And that was a result of a lower inmate count earlier in the year for about the first three quarters of the year. The inmate count was lower. It did spike up at the end, but overall the average was lower. And so they did turn back $1.6 million. So the detail is there. If there's, you know, any other detail that you'd like me to provide to you, I'd certainly be happy to.
Any questions on the turn back?
Okay, moving forward to the next page. This is the status statement for the new biennium at the end of August, which is just 2 months into the biennium. And we begin the biennium with the $1.396 billion beginning balance, which again is about $77 million less than what you had thought. Revenues collected so far to date are $769 million. The remaining forecasted revenues would be $4.7 billion, giving us a total of about $5.4 billion for the biennium. Following that are the appropriations, one-time ongoing authorized carryover of $89 million, and then 2013 authority used in the 11-13 biennium pursuant to emergency clauses of $163 million. And this results in an estimated ending balance for June 30, 2015 of $178 million. Now, when all of you left town in May, your estimate for the ending balance at June 30, 2015 was $87 million. So I'll walk you through again how we get from $87 million to $178 million. We start out with the $87 million, and then our beginning balance was less $77 million, so we back that off. We, at the end of the first 2 months, were about $4 million ahead in revenues, but if you look under the appropriations, there is $164 million that was spent in 11-13 that will not be spent in 13-15, so that decreases our appropriation authority for that. So it's the It's the 77 million, the 4 million, and the 164 million to get us to 178 million for an estimated balance at 2015. Now, obviously, we know this number is going to change many times before 2015, but that's where we are now. At the bottom of this page is we have some selected special fund balances. The Budget Stabilization Fund, as of August 31, after we made the $181 million transfer, is now at $583 million, which is the 9.5% cap of the general fund. The Legacy Fund now has $1.3 billion in it. Foundation Aid Stabilization Fund has $346 million in it. And the Property Tax Relief Fund has $315 million in that fund. If we move to the next page, this is our statement of general fund revenues for the month of August, and this is compared to the legislative forecast. And if you look on the left-hand side of the page, you will see a big negative number of $25 million, and I think this is the first month that we have seen a negative variance in our monthly revenue comparison for a very, very long period of time. And so I'll just go through the detail of what makes up this $25 million negative variance. If you look at sales tax, we were almost $18 million behind our forecast just for the month of August. Now we have two reasons for this. One of those reasons is timing. The month ended on a 3-day holiday weekend, so we think timing plays somewhat into this. But also we had a very, very wet spring. So that halted some construction, some activity. May and June were very, very wet. So that was very likely a contributing factor as well. So we'll see how revenues come in for the month of September. And I guess that will tell us how much was timing and how much was actually a decrease for that month. We're also showing a negative variance for motor vehicle excise tax. And we're showing a $2 million negative variance for individual income tax. And with the individual income tax, I do know that was timing. And I do know that in individual and corp, those income tax collections are coming in very, very, very strong in the month, in the current month of September. So clearly that was timing. And then as another timing issue was the insurance premium taxes of a negative $4.7 million. We have talked with the insurance department, and we're very confident that was timing as well. But nevertheless, we do have a negative ending or negative variance for the month of August of $25 million. However, if you look at the right-hand side of the page, which shows the first 2 months of the biennium, we are showing a positive $3.9 million. For the first 2 months of the biennium. The Legacy Fund, there was a $64 million deposit into the Legacy Fund in the month of August. On the next page is our comparison of general fund revenues to the previous biennium. And if you will look at the left-hand side of the page, you'll see that for the month of August, comparing this August with August of 2 years ago, our revenues were just $3.5 million apart. Biennium to date were considerably higher, though, but that had to do with some transfers.
See, Pam?
Yes?
A question on why would there not be any lottery numbers?
Oh, the lottery numbers, Mr. Chairman, the lottery numbers are not deposited until the end of each of the fiscal years. So we get those in June. So we don't have them in our revenue forecast either, because we know we're going to get that one time just in June. So we will see nothing until June.
Thank you.
If you turn the page, we've been asked to report on the Tobacco Settlement Trust Fund, and I do have a couple pages in here reporting that. I will say that there is no change from the last time I reported this to you, because we receive The settlement monies in April of each biennium, or I'm sorry, April of each year. So what I reported to you last time we met is the very same thing. The total amount received is $338 million. And you can see how that money is spread out on that first page. And the second page is the detail of the collections that the Tobacco Prevention and Control Trust Fund have received to date, and that is $60 million. So again, this number has not changed either from the last time we talked about this.
Before we go on further, Pam, we've been kind of going through this, and there hasn't been any questions. Are there any questions on this?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pam, what would be the balance left? You show the total collected by the trust fund for the Prevention and Control Trust Fund. What is the balance? They have obviously been spending out of that, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question for the which trust fund?
The Tobacco Prevention and Control Trust Fund.
The
they've been spending that down, so that's what they've received. But what do they actually have in cash sitting there?
I don't know that, but I can get that to you before you leave today if you'd like to know that.
Because that was to fund the out years, I believe, after the settlement dollars went down. So I'd like to have that number.
Okay, we'll get that
Pam,
for you.
Pam, if I can interrupt on that. Representative Carlson, on the, I always call it our Bible, the end of 11-13, just shy of $40 million. And then it's estimated for 13-15 to be over $46 million. Any other questions?
On page 9 is the fiscal irregularities that we're required to report. And there are two for this period of time. The first is from the governor's office. They paid $1,000 to an employee for assuming additional duties because another employee had been out of the office for several months due to a major family medical issue. And then in addition, in June, the School for the Blind had some pay adjustments for summer contract work that was outside of the academic year contract. So they had four adjustments there. Those were the only fiscal irregularities of this last quarter. And then finally, on page 10, we're required to report to you any performance bonuses that an agency provides to their employees that exceed 25% of their FTEs. And we had two of those. The first one was Veterans Affairs, and 25 of their total FTE count amounts to 1.750, which would just be one performance bonus. And they gave five performance bonuses, and they documented the need, and it was approved by HRMS. So the difference between the 1.75 and the five is just the 3.25 additional performance bonuses. But they would have been allowed to give one. They gave five. And then OMB, we asked for an exception as well. 25% of our total FTE amounted to 31.875 performance bonuses, which really is 31. We wanted to give 32, so we asked for an exception of just to round that 31.8 up to 32, and we gave 32, and we did get approval from HRMS. And those were the only two. The last page, we're required to report on federal grants and report to you any agency that is applying for a federal grant. And the Department of Veterans Affairs has requested a grant from the federal government of $50,000. And that is the only one that I have to report to you at this time.
Okay.
That includes everything. I'd still be happy to take any questions on anything.
Any questions of Pam on anything in the packet? Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pam, we supposedly have a performance pay system at the state level. And in the past, we've done some checking to see what those pay increases, we always pay up to so much, 3%, 4%, whatever. And we found that in the past, at least, most of the people were getting the same number. And if that is available for what was given to our employees at the beginning of the biennium again, I would like to know what that is, because I believe that we need to keep track whether there is performance evaluations going on, and if there is a variance, or if everybody's still getting the same basic pay.
Representative Carlson and Mr. Chairman, are you asking that I provide you a list of what everyone got? The amount?
Yeah, and I think I'm hoping that we find that there's a variance there, that there is a performance factor to the pay that we're told that we have in our system.
I would you like me to get that to you today? I think we can print it out and get it.
I'd like to see that.
Okay. We did, HRMS worked with many, many agencies, and they did put a lot of work into that. So I'm hoping that we see that there is a lot of variance, but we'll get that report to you.
Any other questions? Any other questions on the reports? General fund balances.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. With that, committee, we will move on to our 1035 item. Board of University and School Lands of a report regarding state agencies that have not submitted a claim for unclaimed property. We'll wait just a second. Good morning. Start.
Good morning. See a number of familiar faces out here this morning. For the record, my name is Linda Fisher. I am the North Dakota Unclaimed Property Administrator, working out of the North Dakota Department of Trust Lands office. We don't have a large presentation here this morning. As I mentioned, we do have some familiar faces in here. I know there are some folks who probably are not as familiar with the concept of unclaimed property as others. And so just a quick one-liner on what unclaimed property is. It is financial assets, mostly related to cash and securities, that are reported to our office and offices in all 50 states, similar to ours, when property is not redeemed by the rightful owner, whether that be uncashed checks or lost securities or securities that were exchanged in a merger, etc. And so back in 2003, there was a little piece of legislation enacted that required our office here in North Dakota to contact state agencies that had unclaimed property reported in the agency name. We are required by law to contact those agencies via certified mail, to give those agencies 1 year from the mailing date to either claim or donate that property back to the Common Schools Trust Fund, which is where it sits while it is waiting to be claimed. And then at the end of that 1 year, the law also requires us to come back to you folks and get permission to take off of the list of eligible properties those that had not been claimed by those agencies. And so I have a one-page testimony here that just lists the statute that gives us and you the authority to do this. And we have a very small mission here this morning, that is just to report the list of properties that we did get for agencies that never completed the claim process, and then of course to ask you to bless that list basically and not allow those to be claimed from here forward, and then of course to answer any questions that you have. So you could see at the bottom of the handout that there we're not talking about a lot of properties, we're not talking about a lot of agencies or a lot of dollars. In effect, there were 16 properties total that were reported to the Unclaimed Property Office. that did not get claimed by the state agencies that are listed off to the left. The total claim value for all of those properties rolled together is $4,043, which is a pretty small number in the scheme of things. And so basically, that's all I have to share with you, unless you have questions about how this property gets to us or what's done with it while we have it. Any questions about unclaimed property that you might have at this point, I could answer for you.
Any questions of Ms. Fisher? There is a motion, yes. A first from Senator Carlisle, a second from Representative Kreit. You want a roll call vote on this, right, Alan? Any discussion? Not, we'll ask for a roll call vote.
Chairman Pollard?
Aye.
Representatives Ballou? Bow? Brandenburg? Carlson? Delzer? Devlin? Glassheim? Grandy? Gugisberg? Hawken? Holman? Kreit? Martinson? Mock? Nelson? Honstead? Sanford? Scarple? Striley? Thorson? Vigasa? Wieland? Williams? Senators Lee? Bowman? Carlisle? Herbaly? Holmberg? Kilzer? Mathern? O'Connell? Robinson? Schneider? Wanzek? Wardner? Warner? Mr. Chairman, the motion passes.
Okay, motion passes. Okay, next item on the agenda. Consideration of state agency requests authorized by the Emergency Commission and needs budget section approval. Morning, Sheila.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the budget section. I'm Sheila Peterson from the Office of Management and Budget. There are two Emergency Commission approved requests that have come on to your attention because they involve an FTE and over $50,000. Both are requests from the Office of the Attorney General. The first one is for a line item transfer from operating expenses into salaries for $200,000. These dollars would be used to pay an oil patch differential for their employees in western North Dakota. And the second one is for a half-time FTE, which would allow them to assist the state's attorneys in western North Dakota with prosecuting cases. They, of course, are a bit overwhelmed out there with the number of crimes and prosecutions going on, and this would allow an extra half-time FTE to assist with those endeavors. The Emergency Commission did approve both of these and are looking for your approval of both of them as well.
I would ask the budget section, is there any questions on either two? Representative Straley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the Attorney General requested these positions during legislative session and got turned down, and now he come back to the Emergency Commission through the budget section to get them, or are these totally different ones that were unforeseen 3 months ago?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Striley, these were not part, this half FTE was not part of the Attorney General's request that you reviewed during the session. These are new, unforeseen in the area of prosecutions.
So Sheila, okay, Representative Vonstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sheila, the $200,000, is it for how many people is that going to include for increases, and what's going to be the average increase that they're looking at?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Onstad, I can't tell you off the top of my head the number of people, but I do know that they are looking at a $500 per month differential due to the higher cost of living in western North Dakota.
So if I may continue, it's basically for housing to pay that cost.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Onstad, it will actually be part of their salary, and many things, including housing, cost more in western North Dakota, so the employee can clearly direct it and use it as just to cover their living expenses. It could be housing, it could be health care, it could be transportation, any of those. It is going as an add-on to their salary.
And if I may continue, Mr. Chairman.
Continue.
When you consider temporary, how long a period is temporary going to be? Is that till the next session, or how is that going to work?
Mr. Chairman, you're referring to the half FTE?
No, this would be the line item for temporary salary increases. So is that going to be for the next 12 months, 18 months? And if we could get how many people you're looking at?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Onstad, I think that language relates to the fact that the oil patch add-on is not considered a permanent increase to an employee's base, and that it is just temporary as long as it is needed and as long as it is funded.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sheila, in this same regard, I thought we approved a differential in pay for Western North Dakota state employees during the session. Would this is this in addition to that? Is it were they not included in the policy that we created in last session? And under the Attorney General's definition, what is Western North Dakota? How far east does it go?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, there was a pool put into the Office of Management and Budget of $8.5 million for energy impact agencies for both rental assistance and an oil patch differential. In the governor's recommended budget, there was more than that. Recommended. What was, and those dollars were pulled out of the respective agency budgets, cut by about 11%, and then put into OMB's budget in this pool. There's two things going on with the Attorney General's office. So first of all, as they recognized that because the pool is smaller than had been collectively requested and recommended in the governor's budget, they probably wouldn't get the full amount that they felt they needed. The Attorney General at that time had in their budget request and in the governor's recommendation about $135,000. Since then, they have evaluated what they need and feel it is more like $200,000. So they knew there was never enough in the pool, and so they looked internally at their own budget and said, you know, we can fund this ourselves at the $500 per person level. And so this is in addition to the pool that is in OMB's budget. Did I answer all of your questions?
President Nelson.
Mr. Chairman and Sheila, yeah, I think you did. It is in addition to the money in the pool. Does this extend? And I forget the definition of oil impacted. It was just the oil producing counties that were involved in that in the pool. Is this the same case with the Attorney General's request, or does this extend to other areas as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, a requirement of the legislation enacting the pool in OMB's budget required a statewide housing assistance survey or a rental survey. And the survey conducted by the Department of Transportation was the one that was adopted by the Emergency Commission as the statewide survey of rental costs that would be used. And DOT used the boundaries of their DOT district offices. So in terms of looking at inside and outside of oil country, for that purpose, we are using DOT's district boundaries for the Minot, Williston, and Dickinson areas. Then, also part of that legislation, we were to do a statewide county-by-county comparison of the salary index. And so we developed, with job service data, a salary index for every county in the state. And in that index, we used the same boundaries as we had used in the rental one as well. But to answer the other part of your question, I don't know exactly where the employees of the Attorney General's office are physically located. My guess is it is in that Williston, Dickinson, Minot area, BCI agents, those that are out there.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman and Sheila, one follow-up. Can we expect that if an agency has the funding available in their budget that we're going to see this type of situation with other agencies as well?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, yes, I do think that, for example, the Department of Transportation, there is looking at, when the Department of Transportation began their housing assistance and oil patch differential, they zeroed it in on classifications that had CDLs, commercial driver's license, because those were the areas where they had the highest turnover. They were having a lot of difficulty retaining those particular employees, so that's where they focused their oil patch differential last biennium and what was envisioned in the pool that's now in OMB's office. They have since begun to see inability to hire in the engineer and engineering tech classifications. They're seeing higher turnovers and difficulties hiring. So if during this biennium they decide they need to go that direction and add to the number of employees that they pay a oil patch differential to, they would need to find that within their own budget because it was never envisioned as part of the pool. And our pool isn't large enough, you know, to do that. So yes, I do think there will be some cases where agencies themselves will come to the table with dollars of their own to deal with some of these recruitment and retention issues.
Representative Ballou.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Sheila, where is the AG's office going to get the money for the half-time FTE?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ballou, they ended up having a little bit higher balance in their operating fund at the end of this biennium than they had anticipated when they put their budget together. So they do have some additional dollars, and that's where the cash will come from.
So if I might continue, it's just those are carryover funds then, or is that monies that we budgeted, or how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ballou, yes, their operating fund is not general fund dollars that revert to the general fund. Those funds stay in that special fund of theirs, and they did end with a higher balance than anticipated.
Sheila, I've got a couple of questions. So just by the way you're speaking here, you're already saying the 8.5 million pool is already allocated and we've only been into the new year by 2 months or whatever. And my second question, do they have any vacant FTEs that they could have used that money instead of asking for 0.5 FTE?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to answer your first question, OMB did put together guidelines for the $8.5 million pool in our budget. And we are to make recommendations to the Emergency Commission on the distributions. Our guidelines basically said that we would not distribute more than one-fourth of it during each six-month period of the biennium. And so we received applications and made our recommendations to the Emergency Commission for the first allocation for July 1, 2013 through December 31st, 2013. So, no, it's not all allocated because we wouldn't expect to allocate it up front. We will continue to look at what the needs of those agencies are. We have been, the first go around, our recommendation with the Emergency Commission approval was quite conservative because we certainly don't want to be paying out a housing assistance allowance or an oil patch differential and then not be able to continue at the entire biennium. And so we've started out slow, and and another reason we did that, for example, is an example is the Highway Patrol. They right now have a very large class of officers going through the training, and they will not be on the road, so to speak, until next January. So if you looked at what the Highway Patrol asked for the first 6 months, it's quite small compared to what it would be the last three quarters of the biennium. And so yes, we have done that first allocation, and the Emergency Commission did approve that at their recent meeting. Regarding the vacant FTE, certainly there is natural turnover, people coming and going within the Office of the Attorney General, but they do not have this particular, they don't have vacancies for this particular expertise that could help those state's attorneys in Western North Dakota actually prosecute cases.
Okay, Representative Whelan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sheila, I may have missed this, and if so, I apologize. But is that position, that halftime position, a permanent or temporary? And if it's temporary, to what extent? When is termination?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Whelan, the Emergency Commission and Budget Section can only approve it to the end of this current biennium. If they want to continue it beyond this biennium, they would need to request it in their budget for 15-17.
Any other questions of the budget from the budget section? Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Sheila, as you can tell, we're a little There's a little question about why, after just really completing the session and we dealt with this and we added a bunch of emergency money in at the end in the last couple days, I think the chairman said $9.5 million for additional law enforcement in the western area because of the increased level of activity and crime. And now we're asked for another half a time person when we could have, I still don't understand why we couldn't use some of the money we set aside to hire that person for till the end of the biennium instead of having to use other funds for that. It just seems odd that we couldn't have figured that out when we had that $9.5 million or whatever that number happens to be. So I was not able to make the emergency commission meeting, or I would have questioned and probably voted against that, because that was what that money was meant for. Unless I missed the intention of us putting that amount of money extra in the last few days of the session.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, you're exactly right. The dollars are there. It's the half FTE that's not. There aren't any dollars associated with this half FTE. The money is there. It's the FTE. The 9 million plus dollars available for law enforcement through the Department of Trust Lands and the energy grants did allow these dollars to be spent on staffing needs within the Office of the Attorney General, but the FTE was not added. So, but the dollars are there for staffing, but not the FTE, or half FTE. Yeah.
Senator Mather.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sheila, isn't it the case that we actually make two decisions on staffing issues in the state? We generally make a decision about the money, and we also make a decision about authorizing the number of staff persons. In terms of FTEs. So this is really just a matter of, we were out of sync. We're supposed to make two decisions, one matching the number of FTEs, and the other is the dollar amount. And this just matches those two items going forward so that we have enough FTEs authorized for the money we have already authorized. Would that be accurate?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Mathern, you could look at it that way.
Representative Carlson.
Well, that brings the question back again, is could this not be contracted? I mean, it's a prosecutor, correct? I mean, there's lots of prosecutors we hire at the county and the city level. Could that not be contracted instead of adding another half-time position?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, certainly the Attorney General's office could look at that. However, that alternative is much more expensive than to have a half-time FTE.
Representative Straley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on the $200,000, what we're really saying here is the agencies didn't get enough for the oil impact. And now we're going to have every one of them probably, or half of them, come back and ask for more because the pool isn't big enough.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Striley, I don't believe that is the case. We certainly appreciate the Office of the Attorney General looking internally at their budget. And like I said, I believe that the Department of Transportation, in looking at needing to expand it to other classifications, will probably be spending some of their own dollars or reallocating some of their own dollars, but I don't think it's everybody.
Senator Carlisle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why don't we request put a little hold on this and get somebody from the AG's office down here, in fairness to them and us.
Mr. Chairman, they are here if you would like to visit with them and ask them questions directly.
Would the budget section like to have a member of the Attorney General's office answer some questions?
I would, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Kathy Roll. I'm the financial administrator with the Office of Attorney General, and I have with me John Byers, the division director for the Criminal and Regulatory Division, which this FTE would be in.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't hear you.
If you could speak a little louder, Kathy, or get the mic
sure.
closer.
I'm Kathy Roll with the Office of Attorney General. I'm the financial administrator there, and I also have with me John Byers, who is the division director for the Criminal and Regulatory Division, which is where this half FTE would serve.
Oh, Ms. Chairman, relative to Representative Carlson's question, the money's in the budget, but you want to add a half-time FTE. Is that correct, my understanding?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlisle, the legislature provided $9.6 million in law enforcement grants. A portion of that legislation provided that the Office of Attorney General could spend up to 10% of the money for staffing and other needs. And so, yes, the money is in there. We need authorization for the half FTE. And maybe to answer a question that was asked earlier, we anticipate, unless we have turnover, that all our positions will be filled as of October 1st.
For the four or for the vacant FTEs?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Does that clarify the issue? Because the $200,000 is a separate issue completely from the 0.5. Okay. Any other questions of the Attorney General's office? Representative Whelan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So will that half-time position in the next session, will you be asking for that as a permanent half-time position? Will it become a permanent one?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Whelan, at this time we don't know that. We don't know what the need will be in the oil impact areas as to whether we'll need that position again or not. So it at this point it's premature for us to say.
Senator Carlisle, and
thank
then
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Jonathan. The question came up about the cost of a prosecutor. That's what you do. Is that, are you comfortable with the money this way or hiring a contract prosecutor?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlisle, there are a couple benefits to adding the FTE versus hiring it by contract. The first one is cost. The cost of hiring a contract attorney is much more expensive than the amount we'll spend on this FTE.
Senator Wardner.
Mr. Chairman and Kathy, right here. It is my understanding that the reason for this individual is, first of all, for expertise, and we have an overwhelming number of cases out in the oil counties, and this person is to bring expertise and help them move those cases along faster. Am I correct in that assumption?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Warner, what we plan to have happen is that this FTE will take over some of the state agency representation so that the other prosecutors in that division can concentrate on the western area litigation.
Senator Robinson. Okay, I would ask first to, is there anyone want to separate the two, the 18-19 and the 18-20, or do you want to take it as one motion? If there's anybody requesting to vote separately, then that's what we'll do. Okay, so there's no, so we'll vote for the two together for 18-19 and 18-20. Motion from Senator Robinson, second from Senator Schneider. Okay. Any other discussion? I think we've talked that one to death. Okay, we'll have a roll call vote.
Chairman Pollard?
Aye.
Ballou? Bo? Brandenburg? Carlson? Devlin? Glassheim? Grandy? Lugisberg, yes. Hawken, yes. Holman, yes. Kreit, yes. Martinson, yes. Mock, yes. Nelson? Onsted? Sanford? Striley? Bigassaw? Wieland? Williams? Senators Lee? Bowman? Carlisle? Herbally? Holmberg? Kilzer? Mathern? O'Connell? Robinson? Schneider? Wanzek? Wardner? Warner? Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Motion carries, 1913. Okay, with that, we'll move to our 1055 item, presentation from the Game and Fish Department. Morning, Mr. DeCray. I think everybody should have gotten a packet in the mail about this, about the three parcels of land, I suspect. Okay.
Chairman Pollack, members of the Budget Committee, I've passed out my testimony, and you had the packets mailed to you and emailed to you, and so I know how well you like to get read to, so I'm not going to read to you, but basically the three parcels were offered to us. The department evaluated them as far as a habitat, and they were excellent, and so we proceeded with the purchase. We notified them as according to the new law, both on the local level, and we published it in the paper. We presented it to the governor. The governor has approved of the purchase, and it is over 10 acres and $10,000, so we are before the budget section to ask for your approval for the purchase of these three pieces of land. So if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them at this time.
I would ask, does the budget section want to go through what the three parcels of land are about? And are everybody read them with great interest, and there's no questions about the three parcels of land? Senator Mathern? Okay, there is a motion from Senator Mathern, a second, I think, from Representative Straley, if I'm correct. No, you got a question. Okay, hang on a second, and a second from Senator Carlisle. Discussion, Representative Straley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dwayne, is there a way we can get a map, or is it available, of all parcels of land owned by Game and Fish in the state?
Chairman Pollard and Representative Straley, I'm sure we've got that at the office. It might take a little bit to put together, but we can certainly do that if you would like that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see where everything's laid out as far as it. And if there's parcels, this all looks connected, so it probably makes some sense, but is there parcels of land elsewhere where we are simply holding on to them for no good reason and should buy some here and sell some of the stuff that's not connected like this is, I guess, is, which I'm sure there probably is.
Chairman Pollard, Representative Straley, was there a question in that? I mean, I don't think the department's position would be that we're holding any land out there that has no use. We may have land out there that perhaps isn't as good a habitat as other habitat is, but I guess I wouldn't think that we would have any land that we're just holding on to for the sake of holding on to land, that we would feel it would have a purpose, and that would be for the sportsmen in North Dakota and sportswomen.
Mr. Chairman, which I'm an avid sportsman, but when's the last time Game and Fish sold a parcel of land, put it back into the tax rolls?
Chairman Pollard and Representative Straley, I'm not aware of ever, but I haven't even worked there a year yet, so maybe there has been. I doubt it.
Senator Bowman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the question that I have is, when did you actually know that you're going to be purchasing this land? Was it before you asked for the fee increases for the game and fish in the last session. The reason that I asked that is I don't remember any discussion on that when we had the debate on the floor. Because if you knew you were going to do that and you didn't tell us that, that's my point. It's kind of going around what we're supposed to do here, and that's be told the truth. You needed the fee increases because you were short of money, but you didn't tell us that you really had another issue, and that was to purchase more land.
Chairman Pollard and Senator Bowman, the fee increase didn't come from us. That came from the legislature. If you'll remember, the governor in his budget address said that there was going to be no fee increases, and that was the way the department submitted its budget to the legislature. The fee increases came from the legislature itself, and we reluctantly supported them with permission from the governor. Now, whether these purchases, I'm sure, were started before the budget, before the legislative session, because nothing is easy or fast in government, and we had to build up to that point where we could get to the point where we could actually purchase these. But the fee increases from legislative testimony and from our testimony certainly were not asked for the purpose of purchasing more land. We do, as you know, in our budget, we do have a line item for capital purchases, and last biennium, we didn't use that full line, and in fact, this $215,000 that we're asking for today is a carryover from the last biennium, so it will not affect the $800,000 line that we have in this biennium. And the reason, for the most part, that we have not spent the maximum that we have been allowed to by the legislature is that we are not in the game of purchasing land. Because when land becomes available, we are limited by state law to its appraised value. And as soon as it becomes known out in the general public that there's land available and that somebody is trying to sell it, you know, 9 times out of 10, a private landowner or some other entity will come forward that's not restricted by the legislature to the appraised value, and they will pay more for it, and the seller, maximizing their income, of course, goes with the highest bidder. And the only time we really are in the game of purchasing land is when we find landowners that for their own reason want to sell it to us. And the reason these purchases have been offered to us is because these individuals want to keep this open to the public, and they were made offers from a private hunting outfit that would have given them more money for this land, but they were not interested in that because they wanted to preserve the land for future generations in the public domain.
If I'm correct, Duane, this land isn't suitable for ag, and past history says it's never been. Is that correct?
Chairman Pollard, you're exactly right. If you would ask the present landowners the purpose of this land now, it would be for nothing or for recreation. So really the change of function of the land by selling it to us will not change.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. DeCray? If not, there's a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Okay, if not, we'll ask for a roll call vote.
Chairman Pollard?
Yes.
Representatives Ballou? Bo? Brandenburg? Carlson? Devlin? Glassheim? Grandy? Gugisberg, Hawken, Holman, Kreit, Martinson, Mock, Nelson, Onstead, Sanford, Striley, Vigasa, Wieland, Williams, Senators Lee,
aye.
Bowman, Carlisle, Herbley, Holmberg, Kilzer,
aye.
Mathern. O'Connell. Robinson.
Aye.
Schneider. Wanzek. Wardner. Warner.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the motion passes.
All right. Moving on to our next item, university system construction projects.
Mr. Chairman, members of the budget section, this is a required report that we present to you at the end of each biennium. So it's every 2 years. It's a report on the state-funded projects that have been authorized, which include a match.
And could you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Kathy McDonald with the North Dakota University System.
Thank you.
The report that is before you, it would be on the back side of the memo, has the projects that were authorized in 2011-13, which included the match requirement. Those include BSC, Williston State, Wahpeton, Minot, and Valley City. And then there were some projects that were carried over from the previous biennia. If you look at that flip side, I'll just kind of explain the columns there. So columns 1 through 3 would be the original legislative appropriation by funding source. In column 4, we have the additional budget section and or legislative appropriation authority. Columns 5 through 8 then would be the total adjusted appropriation authority by funding source. And 9 through 12 would be the cumulative expenditures through June 30th of 2013 by funding source. At the bottom of each one of those, or right following each one of the projects, there are footnotes that include details regarding each of the above, and that also includes the expected date of completion if it hasn't already been completed. For the 2011-13 campus projects, the campus branding project at Williston State has been completed. And then in the carryover projects, the BSC Technical Center renovation and Williston State Virtual Career and Technical renovation are complete, and they stayed within the overall appropriation authority and within the local budget requirements. The remaining projects that have not been completed as of June 30th of 2013 then will be included again 2 years from now in terms of their completion. So with that would be my report, unless anyone has any questions.
Any questions from the budget section? Any questions? Okay, thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
With that, committee, we're going to move on to our 11:15 item, Williston State College. What I'd like to say first, originally on the agenda was two requests from Williston State College. One of them was withdrawn, the one with, I think, what's it called, the Workforce Training Center, and that was withdrawn. And so we have the one item which will require action. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is James Furch, and I serve the state of North Dakota in the role of Vice President for Business Services at Williston State College. In the 2013 legislative session, Williston State received authorization of $11.6 million to renovate Stevens Hall. Through the schematic design process, we've had to make 3 rounds of cuts. In terms of project scope, we've made the following reductions in scope. We've removed all work done in the basement of Stevens Hall, except that which is required for mechanical and systems upgrades. And we've removed any work done in the 1975 Student Center addition. We consider these reductions to be significant, but in looking at the college's recent experience with building projects, a disturbing trend of cost escalation becomes apparent. Our residence hall in 2010 and 11 had its occupancy reduced by 24% to fit within budget. Our Science Center addition required an increase in funds of over 50% to become a successful project. Our Career and Technical Center went from a three-story building to a one-story building to fit within budget. Because of these external factors, as well as the current state of the facility, we have concluded that the best approach going forward is to reduce the scope of the project and move forward with it before costs rise. We've requested and received $517,551 from the North Dakota University System Capital Projects Contingency Pool, which is needed to move forward on the project in its reduced scope. Wilson State College is confident that we will be able to complete the adjusted project within its available funding and does not intend to request funding in the 2015 legislative session to address the areas cut from this project. With that, I ask for your support in this request, and I'm willing to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions of James? Representative Straley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In question, instead of reducing the scope, have you looked at putting this on hold for 2 or 3 years with construction costs that are going to eventually normalize out there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Straley, we have considered that. You know, two things have gone into our thoughts on moving forward with this. One, that we've looked down that path on previous requests and in previous projects, and it seems to me until we find that point, it's not going to get here, and we don't think that we're going to be able to save money by waiting 2 years on this project. Additionally, we have already put a decent amount of money into this project in terms of architect costs, you know, getting that kind of preparation to get to the point where we know what it's going to cost. And some of that work would have to be redone, and it'd be an additional expense to the taxpayers, and we're trying to avoid that.
Continue, Representative Straley.
And then one follow-up, which you may or may not know. What's the enrollment done out there?
Off the top of my head, I believe our headcount enrollment is about 910 students. Our headcount enrollment is an increase of 9% from last fall, and our FTE, I believe, is a 10% increase from last fall.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any other questions from the committee? This will require some action. Any other questions? Any motions? There is a motion of approval from Senator Holmberg. Is there a second? A second from Senator Wardner. Further discussion? Further discussion? No. We'll need to record a roll call vote.
Chairman Pollard?
Aye.
Representative Blue? Bow? Brandenburg? Carlson? Devlin? Glassheim? Grandy? Gugisberg? Hawken? Holman? Kreit? Martinson? Mock, Nelson, Onstead, Sanford, Striley, Vigasa, Wieland, Williams, Senators Lee,
aye.
Bowman,
aye.
Carlisle, Herbley, Holmberg, Kilzer, Mathern, O'Connell, Robinson, Schneider, Wanzik, Wardner, Warner. Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, moving on to the 1130 item. This shows that it requires action, but it does not. The asterisk shouldn't be on there. Information technology. Good morning.
Good
Good morning, Chairman Pollard and members of the budget section. My name is Mike Ressler. I am the interim chief information officer with ITD. As I look around the room and I see not everybody has their laptops, this could be trouble because I was told not to bring any copies. There's a link out on your email that you can access hopefully when you get back. I was going to go through this and do some referencing of pages, but I'll maybe go quickly and just highlight a few things. If anybody has any questions when you get back and you look through your annual report, feel free to give me a call. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. The 2012-13 annual report this year, we called it the Power of IT, followed a very similar format to what we've done in the past, talking a little bit about the different programs and divisions of Information Technology Department. In the executive summary, I did highlight one area, though, and that's around the management of IT projects. And I just want to compliment the legislature for passing a law that codified the governor's executive order. And what that really did is for large IT projects, it said we want the Office of Management, Budget, Information Technology Department, and the agency to work together. And it really forced that. Not that it was necessarily a requirement in all projects because we had great cooperation between them. But I think what it's done, if you talk to the agencies today, is for many of them who only do one large IT project maybe in their career, I think it's kind of nice to have the expertise from the other entities to be part of that and hopefully help that project chances for success increase. And so I just talked a little bit about that in the executive summary. One of the programs I just want to highlight is the Criminal Justice Information Sharing Program. We have a new director. There's a picture of her in the annual report, if you can bring that up. It happens to be on page 6 for those of you who do have your laptops. Molly Brooks is the new CJIS director. I think she'll be outstanding, good experience. She has a legal background, and I'm very confident she will do well in that program. Health Information Technology is another program, of course, that's in our budget, and some great things happening there as well. We have the 6 largest hospitals now who have signed agreements to be part of the health information exchange. And if you're familiar with that program at all, it does require cooperation. It is not a mandate that people participate. But again, we're seeing great cooperation. People are excited to do it. I can get into more detail if anybody has any questions here or offline. Another program we highlight in the annual report is the program called EduTech. And that's where we now have all the public schools connected to PowerSchool. That was a requirement. Thank you for making that a requirement and then providing the funding for it. But all public schools are using PowerSchool. There are a number of private schools that have purchased that through us and are doing the same thing. I think it's a wonderful student administration system that will allow us to collect data that maybe wasn't allowed to be collected before because people had multiple systems. I do want to highlight one area in the Enterprise Services Group, and it really refers to the large projects, because I think when you think of Information Technology Department, you think about, hey, how are we doing with many of our large projects? Over the last year, we've all been watching a few of them that have had some problems, but for the projects that have closed out from July 2012 through June of 2013, 5 projects were closed, meaning completed. The total cost of those 5 projects was a little over $13 million. All 5 of them completed successfully. 4 of them completed under or on budget. 1 completed within the 20% over variance that we allow and consider successful. And so overall, I think we had a good year, again, with large projects. The other thing we monitor closely is schedule, and all 5 of them completed, 3 of them completed on schedule, 2 of them completed beyond what the scheduled budget was. But those were decisions made by the agency that said, you know what, we'd be better off taking a little more time, not spending any more money, but making sure we get what we need. So if you look at the last fiscal year, I think we're excited about what we've done, we being state government with large projects. In our annual report, we talk again about all the divisions. I'm not necessarily going to highlight anything here. I do want to mention one thing. We get a lot of questions with regards to ITD. How well are you doing finding staff? We're a large department, 340 FTE, and our turnover rate in the last fiscal year was 5.7%. So down from the previous year. Again, we're feeling pretty good about that. We have been fortunate that we are finding good qualified people to come to work at ITD. We have a number of projects where we need contractors. That's an area where we are struggling. We're starting to see where it's very difficult to find contract programmers to come to work and be part of this, the projects that we have going on in North Dakota. And then maybe the last thing I want to talk about with regards to something that we're very serious about, and that is security. I think security is something that is going to always be emphasized, and as we're starting to read more and more, especially when you see the news, credit card companies, businesses, whether it be Walmart, those type of stores, you're starting to see a lot more about breaches and hacks. And so we are doing a number of things in that area. Won't get into really any detail here. Just want to emphasize the need and the continued effort to protect all that data that ITD is collecting and is responsible for, because our citizens in North Dakota, of course, are expecting that from us. So something we're taking very seriously. The rest of the annual report gets into financials. It does rate trends, how are we doing from a rate comparison to other states that do similar service. I'm proud to say, again, we find ourselves below cost when we do comparisons to South Dakota, Montana. Minnesota should be a little bit easier due to their size, but it's something we watch closely, because as agencies are forced to buy a lot of services from us, they're really monitoring two things. One is the quality of that service, and the second thing, of course, is are we paying a fair price? And so, again, be more than happy to get into any detail if anybody would like to do that, either today or in another time. So, Chairman Pollitt, members of the budget section, that completes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mike?
Mr.
You
Chairman,
covered 39 pages pretty fast.
Yeah.
Representative Straley, I never see your hand up, but like it's camouflage over
Sorry,
there.
Sorry, I'm short. Two questions, I guess. What's the status of the help desk survey? Has that been started, bid out? I think you're doing it internally. And then the one of the exempt agencies, has that been contracted yet?
Chairman Pollard and Representative Straley, the service desk or help desk study, we are in the process of putting that study together. We are have hired a contractor, and the reason we did that is we wanted an independent source, because we have opinions on maybe what should be done, but we thought this is a good time to maybe get some outside expertise. We hired a firm by the name of Ide Bailey out of Fargo. They won the RFP response. And that report will be done by the end of this calendar year, because we have to present that to the Office of Management and Budget, and then it goes and is reported to the Legislative IT Committee, as well as, I believe, to the budget section. OMB was given $200,000 to do the consolidation study, if you remember, and that really looked at four agencies. It was Oil and Gas, PSC, Water Commission, and the Attorney General's Office. And again, there's a deadline on that as well. I believe it's the end of the calendar year. And so they have hired a company, and I can never think of their name, but they are hired and they are doing interviews as we speak. And so both reports should be completed and reported by the end of the calendar year.
Any other questions of Mike? Thank you.
Thank you.
That committee, moving on, we're a little ahead of schedule. 11:45, Secretary of State and credit card usage rates and credit card fees. Okay. Everybody on your desk should have a copy of what Mr. Jager is going to discuss today. So there is a report. I think everybody should have one. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Al Jager, Secretary of State. We did submit the report electronically, which was part of your agenda, but we also provided copies, which I understand were distributed. I won't go into a lot of detail. The graphs pretty well explain things. If anything, I just want to concentrate on probably the very last page, because the increase of credit card usage and the corresponding usage and what have you is definitely related to the increase of activity in our office. The graph starts back in 2009, and you'll see that in 2011 it takes a significant jump in terms of the amount of business registrations that we have in our office, up over 80 some percent. And so that's an increase. I did allude a little bit to contractor licensing, and just to show you how that statistically has grown, as of today, we have 12,317 licensed active contractors. That's 40% more than we had 2 years ago. It's 70% more than we had 3 years ago, and it's 97% more than we had 4 years ago. And so a lot of those, all of that processing, a lot of that when they come in, of course, that's done with credit cards. Because of the timing of this report, we're only able to give you the first 2 months of this biennium. You know, there's no reason to believe that, you know, with everything that's going to be happening in our office, the use of credit cards and the usage is certainly going to be there. We were appreciative of the fact that our budget did get adjusted to account for those credit cards and fees. It's something that historically, going back quite a number of years, but it was our agency along with many others that did encourage the legislature to pass a law that allowed us to accept credit cards, because at one time the feeling was if the charge is $25, the fee had to be on top of that. The people that come into our office, it's a whole lot better taking a credit card than a personal check, and some of our services were $5, and we'd bill them and we wouldn't get paid. Now we get paid for the services that we provide, so there's a long history in that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, if somebody has any questions about the report, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Any questions for the Secretary of State? Any questions? Thank you, Al.
Thank you.
With that, committee, before we break for lunch, I want to bring forward, we meet next time, and then we'll bring it up at the end, but we tend to lose some people towards the end of the meeting. Our next meeting is scheduled for December 11th. And then what I would like the section to think about is I'm looking at March 12th for the next budget section meeting, or not the next, the next after the next. So so if anybody has a problem with that within the next couple of weeks or so, if you would please get a hold of legislative council. So I'm trying to get these in place, so a little further out. So a tentative for March would be the 12th, and we for sure are online for December 11th. So, just so the committee knows. With that, we don't have a big agenda this afternoon, but we will start back up at 1 o'clock, so we'll be in recess until 1 o'clock. We'll call the budget section back to order. I tend to hit that a little hard. We're on our 1 o'clock item, and I see the state treasurer is in the back, I think. Oh, there she is in front of me here. So, Ms. Schmidt, how are you?
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Treasurer Kelly Schmidt. Chairman Pollard and members of the committee, I'm here to report to the budget section regarding outstanding checks. During the 2011 session, we added this duty to report to you, and we sought to, one, reduce the total number of stale dated checks that we have in the Treasury, two, to reduce the amount of money the state has tied up in those outstanding checks, three, to get the money to its rightful owner before it is transferred to unclaimed property, and four, to encourage state agencies to pursue the resolution of these checks that are outstanding. and so far, our outcomes have not been achieved. The increase from the fiscal year 2011 to 2012 was a small increase of only 1.1% in the number of checks outstanding and a 28.4% increase in the dollar value those checks represent. The increase from fiscal year 2012 to 13 is an increase of 12.74% in the number of checks, but represents a 31.74% increase in total value. We're confident that this is due to the overall increase in economic activity rather than the failure of our state agencies to pursue the resolution of their outstanding checks. Now, why is this important? First of all, efficiency. The longer a check sits uncashed, the likelihood we are of resolution and having those dollars go to the purpose in which they were originally intended. Two is to ensure the money is put to proper use. If the dollars are not in the state treasury, we can't use them, and of course, we still have an expenditure that's outstanding should that check have not been received by the proper person. And three, it saves the state costs and processing costs because we don't have to continue to cancel checks, to void checks, and to reissue them. We will continue to encourage agencies to work their outstanding checks, and the ultimate goal is to have nothing going to state to unclaimed property and make sure the dollars are with the rightful owner. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, any questions for the state treasurer on the report? Thank you, Kelly. That next item, representative from the State Water Commission, and an update with their projects and what's going on. Someone here from the State Water Commission. Any information on your desk, you probably have a piece of paper that says North Dakota State Water Commission project priorities. Good afternoon, we're running quicker. Come on up, yes.
Okay, good afternoon. I'm Todd Sano, state engineer. Do you have anything you want to bring up before I make any statements or?
No.
Okay. Okay, good afternoon. And I'm here just before you just to talk about the Water Commission and Water Commission's priorities and for the 2013-2015 biennium. The appropriations process in our Senate bill last year this past winter, we're supposed to come report to you if we're deviating at all from the priorities list. And we're very early in the process. We're probably 10% into the biennium. So as of right now, there's nothing to report to you on deviation. We are certainly planning on trying to follow the project priorities. So the project priorities that were developed, do you have it in front of you? Did it get handed out by chance? Yeah, okay. So I could just kind of go through that quickly with you. And we do have a Water Commission meeting that's coming up on October 7th, and we have well over $100 million of projects that we'll be approving at the Water Commission meeting on October 7th. So one of them is a community water facility revolving loan fund for $15 million. Next is the Devil's Lake Flood Control Project. That's ongoing operations to run the outlets. We have been running both outlets basically at full capacity. We're down, most of the time we've been running 600 CFS. Right now we're running 550, so we're probably spending $500,000 a month in electricity alone right now. So the $10 million, we'll use most of that money just operating the outlets. Fargo Flood Control, the City of Fargo hasn't requested that money yet. In fact, they still have quite a bit of the first $75 million that we allocated the last two bienniums. They're still struggling with the federal project and getting to move forward. So we've been providing money for acquisitions and setback levies through town. No money's been allocated towards the diversion at this point. So right now we have no intentions of approving any of that $100 million at the next meeting. Mouse River Flood Control, There's $61 million there. Commission hasn't approved any of that funding yet either. They still have money available for acquisitions. There is a request from Minot for another $24 million of acquisitions that we will have on the agenda October 7th. Our agenda October 7th, usually our Water Commission meetings run about 4 hours. This one might go much, much longer because we have many, many projects and lots of dollars that we're working with. So, next on the list is Cheyenne River Flood Control, $21 million. And we have approved some more money there for acquisitions at this point and some design work, project work has not been approved yet. General Water Management, $33 million to set aside for that. We've approved a small portion of that, and that's just ongoing requests that occur throughout the state, so that money will be all used up over the biennium too. Irrigation, there's $5 million for irrigation development throughout the state, and so far we've approved $350,000 there. Regarding Fargo Water Supply, the commission previously approved $15 million in this past biennium, and the project priorities for this upcoming biennium is for another $15 million. And that is to address the Devil's Lake discharges, higher sulfate levels in the Cheyenne River. Fargo uses the Cheyenne River as their backup water supply source. So when there's issues on the Red River, they use the Cheyenne River. And they do use it quite often. So the Water Commission is going to be putting $30 million towards their new treatment plant that will address those issues. They feel about $60 million with that treatment plant will be related to sulfate reduction. So far they've only expended $2.1 million of the previous $15 million. And we have not approved the extra $15 million yet, so they haven't requested that either. Next, Northwest Area Water Supply Project, there's $14 million prioritized there. We're in the third round of NEPA, and with the Bureau of Reclamation, we're in the middle of a lawsuit with Canada. So as of right now, no additional funding has been put towards that this biennium. There is a moratorium, an injunction by the judge in Washington, D.C. for more build-out. We were able to build out, and she keeps getting stricter and stricter with the Bureau of Reclamation in the state of North Dakota on the issue. So until the EIS gets out on the street and is made public and we can make use of that before the courts, the NAS probably will not be expending much money at this point. Red River Valley Water Supply, there's $11 million potentially set aside for that project. No action has been taken on that yet either. We have directions, and Water Topics is also supposed to take a look at an overview committee at all the options available getting water to the Red River. As you know, we have another issue with the federal government there. There's no record of decision to move forward with the Red River Valley Water Supply Project. So looks like the administration in D.C. and OMB are not willing to sign the record of decision, so we're kind of at an impasse right now. So the big issue is, does the state of North Dakota try to look at going its own and trying to overcome these hurdles and build our own project, or do we continue to march forward and trying to have, you know, move forward with the PIC Sloan plan and have a garrison project with the federal government involved? So right now, that's in limbo. We've had several discussions with Lake Agassiz and Red River and the Garrison Diversion Conservancy District regarding this. So we'll see where we go with it in the coming months. But right now, we really need to decide the direction, the future of that project. Southwest Pipeline Project, $79 million has been allocated as a priority there, and we started approving projects there. We got many contracts going on in that area. And next is State Water Supply Program, $71 million, and commission's approved $14 million. We have on the agenda approval of many water supply projects for October 7th. And that should help move some of these projects forward. We do have some issues on water, on policy, water supply, the Water Commission. We usually relied on the federal government for funding water supply projects. So we have these requests under the $71 million. A lot of it's related to rehabilitation, enhancement of existing infrastructure. So it's like their treatment plants, they want to renovate treatment plants. Grand Forks wants to build a new treatment plant. Grafton wants to build a new treatment plant. Mandan wants to build a new intake. There's requests for water towers like Surrey and Park River. There's regional water systems that are building out more. We've already allocated money to those, but there's a bunch of regional water systems that want to enhance or do modifications to their treatment plant. So this is all a new area that the Water Commission has put very limited funding towards. So right now on this priority list, this would be a major shift in funding priorities and major amounts of money would be going there. So we're looking at funding a lot of these projects at the October 7th Water Commission meeting. At the same time, we're working on water policy for all types of projects, but in particular water supply projects. And the Water Commission will be having a meeting on October 21st, and the governor will chair that. That will be just dealing with policy. So we'll have stakeholders from throughout the state there, and we'll be laying out the direction on the policy and how we want to fund projects and determine what's eligible and ineligible. A lot of the requests that we have on this priority list and all that we've got into the biennium, some of the what they've requested for is ineligible items that would not be cost, that we couldn't cost share on. So those are some of the things that we'll be addressing. Next on the list is Western Area Water Supply Program. Bank of North Dakota provided another $40 million on top of the $110 million last biennium. There's also $79 million prioritized towards that project too. And we're looking at a combination loan grant, and that will be on the agenda too. So we're looking at loaning out. The bank's already approved loaning out another $40 million. The Water Commission's also approved that. But we're looking at approving another $40 million at the October 7th meeting. And the other one's weather modification. There's $1 million set aside for that. So that's that program. Basically, the season just wrapped up here in the last couple weeks. So there's money for that for the next year in 2014. So that's a quick summary of priorities. Right now, we're planning to try. Right now, we're still on track with the priorities that were listed, and we have not deviated. So that's the report from the Water Commission.
Any questions, Mr. Sandoz? Senator Carlisle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Todd, how about the tree removal down at University of Mary, the big trees that went in the water? Is that part of the general management? And how, do we have them out with the Corps yet, or where are we at on it before winter?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlisle. The Burley and Morton County, we've done a couple projects and cost shared with them on trying to address the issue of the flood impacts from 2011 for South Bismarck and Mandan. One of them they're trying to get the permits for is to go in and remove snags and trees that are deposited down by the U of Mary Bend below the mouth of the Hart River. So we're trying to move towards that project. Permits are issues. So as of right now, the goal is to try to get a project going this fall. As of now, the permits aren't in place. So we'll see what happens in the next couple months. Sand and clearing projects, there's other ones across the state. We got big issues too in the Souris River. Many trees died during the 2011 flood. So we'll need to be addressing that issue there too, along with, we got lots of snag and clearing issues too in eastern North Dakota and the Cheyenne, the Red River basins too.
Okay. Representative Onstead to Senator Wardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Todd, thank you for this report and an update. One of the concerns, I get a lot of questions on the request for water permits in western North Dakota. Some are out there well over 2 years old and so on, and in the backlog and that. Are we able to catch up on that? Or I think the request is, if they're not going to approve it, then just deny me that and not let me just hang out there for 2-3 years on that. So where's the status of these water permits and requests?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Onstead, regarding water permits, a lot of the reasons why some of those permits are still hanging out there, a lot of our aquifers are pretty much fully appropriated, so they're just in the queue, potentially, if we can determine that there's more water available. Say we do some more monitoring and see that there's more water available, then we would issue those permits. So we're not actually working on a lot of those permits in some of those aquifer systems because there just isn't the water available. But we don't, you know, the who's applied for that water permit probably doesn't want to lose that priority date. If we say we deny it, they lose the priority date, and then everyone else that's filed for a water permit after that would jump in front. So usually what we do is we just keep them in queue in case we do figure out there's more water available and that we would have issued some more permits.
If I may follow a question, Mr. Chairman, are you in contact with those that make the request, at least to let you know what the status is so they know?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Onstead, we do have lots of permits out there, and we do try to keep them informed, so our hydrogeologists do try to stay in contact with them and give them updates. Sometimes they might be inconsistent, a little sporadic, but some of the things we're doing to address the issue, we did get funding for two additional hydrogeologists, and we did have a couple others that had retired, so we have four new hydrogeologists on staff, so we think we can really make some headway on some of these water permits. And actually, right now, we are getting more questions and concerns not out west. I think we've moved a lot of our hydrogeologists and staff on addressing issues out west. We're actually getting a lot more concerns about irrigation in the east or in central North Dakota. So actually, our office and the governor's office, we're receiving even more pressure from irrigators than actually for people trying to get permits to do water depots and things like that out west. So we're trying to pick up the slack in that area too. So we don't have that large of a staff. We tried, we got a couple additional positions, and water's become extremely valuable, and it's a very limited resource, especially in the groundwater side of things. So we have to be very prudent how we allocate these permits, because once you have it, it's a right. So
Senator Warner.
Mr. Chairman and Todd, this is an easy one. A little more of information on record of decision. When the record of decision comes, does that mean that we know where the project is going to go and how it's going to go? Is that what that means? I've heard you talk about it before, but I wasn't always sure what that meant.
Yeah, when the federal government does an EIS, the last step, once they've gone through the environmental impact statement, they have to issue a record of decision on the EIS that's taken place, and they're not willing to issue the record decision for the Red River Valley Water Supply Project, so it's in limbo. It's like a six-year-old EIS right now that's still sitting out there. So it might be to the point that even if they want to issue a record decision, they might have to go back and address, to bring that EIS up to current date. So that's what the record decision. Then there's next steps. Then you got to get, funding for the project and everything else. So you're going to have to get into a WERDA bill or, Water Resources Development Act, or get in the core budget or the Bureau's budget to actually fund these projects. So there's several steps. It's not just getting the record of decision. So you need record of decision authorization and funding for the projects.
Any other questions for Mr. Sando? Okay, thank you.
Yep.
With that, moving on to 120, representative from the Housing Finance Agency. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jolene Klein. I'm the acting executive director of the North Dakota Housing Finance Agency. Chairman Pollard and members of the budget section, you should all have a handout of my report. If you don't, just raise your hand and Max in the back will make sure that you have a copy. The Housing Incentive Fund was reauthorized during the 63rd legislative session. As part of that reauthorization, we are required to make quarterly progress reports on how we have addressed the housing needs for essential service workers in the state. As you will recall, you funded or reauthorized the program at a funding level of $35.4 million, which was composed of $20 million in state income tax credits as well as a $15.4 million general fund appropriation. And I want to take this opportunity to personally thank every one of you for supporting that program. And I'll tell you a little bit about how the response has been to that program. We held our first quarterly funding round with the application deadline of June 28th. Keeping in mind that this $35.4 million was to be funding for the two-year biennium, we had over $36 million in requests for the $35.4 million. They were good projects, but we scaled that back and issued commitments to 24 projects, or 18 projects, excuse me, in the amount of $20.4 million. And the reason that we scaled that back is we knew that there were some good projects in some good communities that needed a little more time to get those applications together, and so we wanted to be able to hold at least one more quarterly funding round. But those 18 projects, and you've got a listing showing you where those projects are located, but essentially they're going to create 494 housing units across the state. 168 of those units are going to house essential service workers. You required us that we must give number one priority to housing essential service workers, and that was defined as employees of political jurisdictions, including cities, counties, state, with special emphasis on teacher housing, on law enforcement housing, as well as medical facility employees. And we aren't targeting the doctors and nurses there. We are targeting the CNAs at the long-term care facilities and the lower paid medical facility workers, janitorial, those kinds of folks who really can't afford the rent in those energy impacted areas. We also, as part of the process during the legislative session, we did a survey of political jurisdictions to find out how many units are owned out there by these jurisdictions. And if you were in any of those committee hearings, you heard the talk about non-traditional landlords. And it was our effort to try to reduce those number of non-traditional landlords, get them out of the housing business if at all possible. While we created or will create 168 units out of that first funding round, none of those are actually reducing the number of units. In other words, a school that may own six units, they aren't necessarily at this point selling off their inventory and putting their teachers into the housing we are creating, but we are keeping those schools from having to add additional FEMA trailers or mobile homes on their sites, those kinds of stories that we're hearing. We're keeping cities from having to build more housing for their employees. So I think from that perspective, the program is very successful because there's 168 essential service workers that will not have to be housed by political jurisdictions unless those jurisdictions so choose to take advantage of the program. We are holding our next funding round September 30th. We, at this point, expect about a 3-to-1 request for the remaining $15 million. Projects that we have been working with, doing pre-reviews, we expect more than, well, probably in that $40,000 to $50,000 or a million in requests for those remaining dollars. So we will essentially be out of dollars for affordable housing until the 2015 legislature meets again. On the capitalization side, I just wanted to give you a quick update. The $20 million in state income tax, we've sold or had contributions for just under $6 million of that, which means that some of those projects, while they have a conditional commitment, they aren't necessarily, they don't have the dollars in the bank to start construction, so they're still out fundraising. We're out fundraising on the agency level to get that fund capitalized so that we can get the remaining $14 million into that fund so these projects can, all of them can start construction. Again, I want to thank you for your support and hope that you will you know, keep this in your mind about the pent-up need for affordable housing, and that you'll look favorably during the next legislative session, because it is clearly a need, and it isn't just a need for essential service workers in oil country. It is a need for housing seniors, people with disabilities, as you'll see from that list with the targeting. I will go through that just very quickly, and it, you have a little bit smaller version than I do, but if you're interested in the projects and the essential service worker column, you would go about two-thirds of the way over onto the page. There's a column that says essential service worker units, and that identifies how many units within each of those projects those developers decided to target for that particular kind of employee. And if you look under the tenant type, if you see zeros under the essential service worker units, it's most likely because that particular project is not targeted for worker housing. It's targeted for a special needs population. Thank you, and I will leave it at that.
Any questions for Ms. Klein? Any questions from the section? Thank you. With that, moving on, someone from the DOCR and the Prison Population Management Plan, admissions, et cetera, et cetera. We need a couple up here, three up here.
Good afternoon, Chairman Pollard and members of the budget section. I'm Leanne Birch, Director of the North Dakota Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. I'm here today to provide you with an update on the department's prison population management plan, inmate admissions, and the number of inmates the department has not admitted after sentencing pursuant to Section 6 of our appropriation bill, Senate Bill 2015. Section 6 of Senate Bill 2015 provided the DOCR the authority to refuse to admit inmates sentenced to the physical custody of the department when the admission of inmates exceeds the maximum operational capacity of its prison facilities and results in the department exceeding its authorized legislative appropriation for contract housing. Section 6 also directs the DOCR to develop a prison population management plan to prioritize admissions based on sentences and the availability of space within its facilities. To date, the DOCR has not refused to admit any inmates pursuant to Section 6. As I indicated during the session, we are hoping that this language brings some attention to the issue of how correctional resources are being utilized and awareness that correctional resources are finite. If the DOCR does reach capacity and does invoke this authority, it still would not refuse the admission of an inmate, but rather there may be a delay in the department's ability to accept the inmate. We may get to the point where it would be one inmate out, one inmate in. That is when the DOCR's prison population management plan would be used to prioritize admissions and releases. Before DOCR reaches that point, the department will, of course, be in regular communication with the county sheriffs who operate county jails, as well as prosecutors and judges who play key roles in determining who is sentenced to the department's custody. Because of the focus on the front-end management as promoted in this prison population management plan, I believe it's important to discuss all of the back-end efforts the DOCR has undertaken over the past 15 years to manage the prison growth, which includes the addition of James River Correctional Center, Dakota Women's Correctional and Rehabilitation Center, Tompkins Rehabilitation and Correctional Center, male and female inmate transition, halfway houses, enhanced paroling, transition from prison to community initiative, managing non-compliant behavior guidelines and strategies, evidence-based programming, prioritizing the supervision of higher risk offenders over lower risk offenders, and implementation of a diversion caseload. The DOCR will continue to prioritize releases to manage correctional resources and maintain public safety. As you can see, we prioritized as far as when we actually would invoke that authority, and hopefully we would never, we would obviously take the most serious cases, the most dangerous offenders in first, and then, of course, those would be prioritized over all of those as far as nonviolent misdemeanor and lower level felons. Another way to conceptualize this is to think of a pyramid with a smaller number of cases, but most serious at the top, first priority to access prison resources, and the larger number of cases, but less serious at the bottom and least priority to access prison resources. And you can see that, I put the pyramid in there. And obviously there would be other criteria. If we had to have a tiebreaker, we would look at their risk score based on the LSIR, which is the risk tool that the Department of Corrections uses, the length of time on a waiting list. So if someone had been sitting in a jail for quite some time pre-trial, we would want to prioritize admission of those individuals once they're sentenced, and of course their custody level. The attachment to my testimony include inmate admissions for calendar year 2012, and then January 1st through August 31st, 2013. Also attached are three count reports that we have provided in the past. The mail count report is a count of all male inmates by placement. The second to the last column on the right is the male population estimate adopted by the 2013-2015 legislature. The female count report is all female inmates by placement. And the second to the last column on the right is the female population estimate adopted by the 2013-2015 legislature. DOCR capacity is the number of inmates we have housed in DOCR facilities, which is compared to the budgeted capacity that was adopted in our appropriation bill by the 2013-2015 legislature. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Carlisle.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Leanne, if you could kind of enlighten us a little bit. Now, the new DUI bill that we just passed is signed into law, and then we have the drug court and the juvenile drug court. Now, when we're talking admissions, there's apparently some conflicts between the DUI legislation and our drug court as it stands now. Can you amplify on there or help us out a little bit, especially me? Because they tried to explain it, but apparently there's going to be some issues, and how do we resolve them?
Chairman Pollard and Senator Carlisle, I believe that conversation has come up that some of the new DUI legislation interferes with the ability for some offenders to actually access drug court because of the minimum mandatories. That might be something that the legislature may have to review in the next session to make sure that drug courts remain strong and a good option to dealing with DUI offenders. But right now, I think there's an issue.
Okay, Ms. Chairman, one more
question.
Can we do anything potentially at our interim committee on alternatives or that wouldn't be a fit, possibly?
Chairman Pollard and Senator Carla, I'm not aware that we could do anything during the interim.
Any other questions of Leanne? We had put this into the corrections budget as an amendment, so this is important information I feel that we need to have. So,
thank you.
Anything else? Any questions? Okay. Okay, budget section. We're to the 145 item, committee discussion and staff directives. Are there any? Any discussion? Anything you're asking for? Anything pertinent to the operation besides what our normal schedule is? Representative Cray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering for the next meeting during the session, I think it was 1538, we had some impact grants going out to long-term care DDs, about $2 million. I think it was supposed to be through Commerce. Could we kind of get an update of what's happening with that, if that money is going out or will it be from the Commerce Department?
Okay. Good idea.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Carlisle.
Mr. Chairman, while we're at it, the homeless, I think we put a couple million bucks in that. Again, you mentioned the Commerce. We could get an update on the money that's out there, and then some child care. I think there's like $2.6 million, if I remember. And it might be, it was in the Industrial Commission, but I think it's running through Commerce if we get kind of an update. Okay. Next round, please.
Okay. Anything else? Any other information being requested? Okay. I'll remind the interim budget section, our next meeting is December 11th, and tentative March 12th. So let us know, let Legislative Council know if that date's going to work for March. So anything else? Not, I'd ask for a motion. So move. We are adjourned.